G'day everyone, Jess here. Welcome back to the Create and Thrive podcast. Today I have an interview for you with a jeweler, fellow jeweler, Rebecca Haas from the US. Rebecca has a small independent jewelry business in Vermont. She has been selling jewelry for over two decades, so she's been around in the industry for a long time and has a lot of wisdom to share with us today about what she's learned during that time. She makes nature-inspired jewelry with bold yet simple lines. In fact, I joke in this episode that she and I have a very similar taste in the jewelry we create, and I actually try not to look at her stuff too much so I don't get accidentally inspired, but I love what she makes, and I really wanted to bring her on the show today because she is still successful after all these years selling independently, and she talks about how she sells, where she sells, what works for her now, what worked for her in the past, and what she's had to change over all of those years in order to stay profitable and keep her business afloat. So we have a lot to cover in today's episode. If you're watching this on YouTube and you enjoy this one, please give me a thumbs up and make sure to subscribe to so you don't miss future interviews. I am trying to do more interviews this year. I think we can learn so much from talking with and learning from and listening to other makers in business who have been successful and learning what they do so we can take a leaf out of their book. So let's get into this interview with Rebecca Haas. Do you want to grow a thriving, profitable handmade business? My name's Jess Van Den, and I'm here to help you do just that. I took my own handmade business full-time in 2010, and since 2013, I've helped thousands of makers just like you create and grow successful handmade businesses. So, are you ready to thrive? Let's get learning. I'm here today with Rebecca Haas. Welcome to the podcast, Rebecca.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm super excited to be here.
I am super excited to chat to you because you have been a jeweler for a long time. And has this pretty much been the only career you've had, is making jewelry?
It is. It's been the only career I've had. It's evolved over time. But yeah, I graduated from college in 2000, and it was really the only thing I wanted to do. So I sort of started having a go at it right away, and I had other side hustles and, you know, other jobs and other things to support it at the beginning, but I've been kind of working at it since then.
That's awesome. So many people I talk to have kind of, you know, done something else and then come to craft later in life or something like that. So it'll be really interesting to talk to you today about that process, especially, you know, starting off young and getting straight into it. And of course, you started off in 2000. That was a long time ago and the world was very different. Can you talk us through a little bit how things have changed for running a jewelry business since then? Like, how did it start for you? How are you selling stuff? How has that changed to now?
Yeah, it has changed a lot. I was just going over a little bit, thinking about what we were going to talk about today, and it kind of brought it all back. But when I started, I finished school. So I started making jewelry I took a gap year between high school and college, and I traveled for the year and I started making jewelry in Mexico. And I lived there for half a year and I just loved it. So I kept working on it a bit through college, but it wasn't an art school or anything. It was just a liberal arts school in New York. And when I finished, it was still kind of the only thing I wanted to do. So I decided to get two apprenticeships. I mean, I was going to take as many apprenticeships as I could find, but I got two part-time sort of job. One was paid, one was not paid, working for different jewelers that did very different kinds of work. So one did sort of beaded work and did a lot of wholesale work and sold to department stores. And one person did more high-end, like fine jewelry, diamonds and 18 karat, like, you know, sort of show pieces that were sold in galleries. And I just worked for them and learned, you know, how to do production, which is really important when you're learning how to not only make jewelry, but do it as a business. You need to learn how to do it in a way that actually makes money so that you can make things quickly enough to sell.
Yeah.
So it's, and there's a lot of different ways to do it. So it was nice to see these two very different business models of, you know, still like one woman business, like this is how they decided to do it. Mm-hmm. So one of the women that I worked for, she was in Brooklyn. And if you could possibly start a business in Brooklyn in like 2000, that would be a great idea because there's so much going on there at that time. So I was doing production for her and she had a little shop on a very hip street. And she's like, well, you can try some of your jewelry in there if you want and see if people like it. You know, you can have a little shelf and see what people say. So that was my first opportunity. I sold consignment. I had one shelf and I made things in a little studio in my kitchen in a sixth floor building in Brooklyn. And it was great. I mean, actually, I remember early on, two of my pieces got stolen from the store. And she was so apologetic and she felt so horrible. And she was like, I'm really sorry. These pieces got stolen. And I was like, that's okay. While I was there, I was actually approached by a showroom. So that was kind of how people did a lot of reaching out to stores. And you kind of had to have a showroom or you had to do wholesale shows because there was no Instagram, like digital photography was very difficult. There was no iPhones, I don't think. I mean, I had a tiny little like Canon Elf to take digital photos, but they were terrible. So you'd have to make a physical line of jewelry and then the showroom would take it around to a bunch of shows. And so I started out, I just lucked into that. She offered, I was 21 and I was like, okay, great. So I knew nothing about it. I knew nothing about how to price anything. I knew nothing about, you know, how to like balance doing, I wasn't doing any selling anything direct to consumer. I was doing only wholesale at the time. Some people in that I knew in New York were doing like, you know, they'd put up a table on the street in Soho and sell jewelry, or they'd do little craft markets in New York. But I never really wanted to do that at that time. So I just stuck with wholesale. And I mean, we had to make physical line sheets. We had to take pictures with these horrible digital cameras and everything was like shadowy and blurry and you couldn't see it anyway. And then like make physical printed sets of line sheets of like 20 pages of color copies that were incredibly expensive to make and just ended up in the trash.
Yeah.
But she would take them with her to the show and hand them to potential accounts and
wow.
People would write orders and they would fax them to me.
Some young people listening to this is what is a fax? What is that?
I know. It was amazing to me that how many stores actually the ones that I kept working with like just would not let go of the fax even long after they really should have been well gone. Like, what's your fax number? I'll fax you the order. Really? Yeah. So that was how I started. It was just a lot of hustle. I got myself a little studio outside of my kitchen on the waterfront in Brooklyn and would put together collections on a very seasonal, like wholesale seasonal basis and have them ready to go four times a year. And then the person that I worked with maintained all the relationships and did all that. So
you kind of had a very gentle introduction into the world of selling with somebody helping you through that process, which sounds
I really did. I got very lucky and sort of stumbled into somebody else who was just starting out and was just starting the showroom. It didn't end up to be a great long-term plan, probably because I wasn't setting my prices right at the time. So I was just and it was expensive. Being a part of a showroom is expensive. It's still expensive. And they take a monthly cut and then they take a cut of everything you sell and you have to pay to be a part of each show. So even though I was making lots of jewelry and getting big orders from like Japanese department stores, I wasn't making any money. So I ended up having to, you know, leave that relationship and start trying to do shows on my own because it was just too much. It was too much running to stand still, you know.
So yeah.
Not good.
So let's fast forward to today. How do you sell now in comparison to that? Obviously, there was an evolution there, but where have you landed at the moment?
So now, in between that time, I moved from New York City to Vermont. I had two kids. There have been several recessions. There's been a pandemic. There's been thing after thing to adapt to.
Yep.
But shortly after I moved up here, I moved up here in 2008, which I don't know if it was the same there, but in the States, there was a big recession here in 2008.
That's when I started my business.
So that's basically when I restarted my business because I'd been selling all wholesale and all these stores that I'd been selling to were really struggling and they were no longer making big orders. They weren't even maybe making any orders. A lot of places went out of business. So I had this new baby. I was in the middle of nowhere. I was like, okay, well, this is not working. So at that point, I decided that I really needed to figure out how to reinvent my business. Like, I thought when I moved up here, I might want to go back to New York and keep doing shows and have that be my center of sales. But in reality, that was not that appealing. So I was like, I need to figure out how to make it work up here. So I really invested a lot of time and energy into learning how to take pictures. Like, I bought myself a camera and I spent a lot of time teaching myself how to take good pictures so that I could both post things on Instagram and I could sell direct on a website. So I built a website and then tried to do everything I could to redirect focus to driving traffic to my website. Both because it's more direct, it's very easy for living at home and having kids. If you have orders come in and then you make them and you send them, it's very nice and simple. But also not having all my eggs in one basket anymore. Like, I realized I did not want to just do one thing. So actually, the first year I moved up here, when I realized everything was exploded and not going to work the way I had done it before, I was like, there was a minute when I had this baby and childcare here is very expensive. So I was like barely breaking even, like making jewelry and taking care of the kid and sending the kid to daycare. And it's like, this is kind of, again, running to stand still. But I knew if I stopped, it would be really hard to start again. So I just kind of was like, all right, what can I do? I'll just say yes to everything. This is going to be my year of yes. If someone asks me to, will I do consignment, which I'd always said no to, I'm like, sure, yes. Like, will I do a trunk show in their kitchen? Sure. Like, will I try this craft show? Fine. Like, I just said, I really did just say yes to kind of anybody that offered something. So I had a much less defined, like, I'm just going to be a wholesale person who just sells to fancy galleries. Like, that was my sort of young idea of what success looked like. But now, so now after sort of weeding out some of the things I said yes to at the time, which I realized now it doesn't make sense anymore. But now I basically do a third of my business is website, a third is still wholesale, and a third is craft shows. So I kind of split it up, and I only do two really, like, one really big and one medium craft show a year, and then the rest is just hanging out at home, making jewelry in the studio and trying to keep up.
Yes, keep up is is the way to put it. That's really interesting that you have that split and you're still like you haven't like moved away completely from wholesale or from, craft shows. Are you finding the current economic climate a challenging time in the States? It's definitely a challenging time in Australia, and it has been for the last year or two. After kind of the COVID boom, it's sort of a bit of a bust for a lot of people at the moment.
Yeah, last year was down, was my first, like, it was my first year sort of being down since I started growing again in 2008. So it was down about 15% last year. Not terrible, but noticeable for sure. But also, like, the 2 years of COVID, I expected, who knows what to expect in a pandemic. Like, nobody, I don't know why I expected anything, but I expected that people were not going to need jewelry, but people, and my website was so busy during COVID, and I was able to really reach out to people directly. And I have, since I've done a lot of, like, local craft shows, and I know a lot of my customers from either working with them for a long time or meeting them at shows or just having them reorder for a long time. I have a pretty good relationship with a lot of people. So I was able to reach out to people over email and say, how are you doing? This is all pretty horrible and crazy. Like, do you, and there were people who were, when during the period of isolation, there was a lot of holidays where, like, there was a Mother's Day where we were all in lockdown. So, like, if your mom is not near you, maybe send her jewelry. That might be nice, And people really responded to that. And I felt like there was a way to kind of tap into how people were feeling and what they needed without being too, like, smarmy and salesy about it, but just as a way to kind of offer a service that people really did want to find a way to reach out to people. And just to be able to do that and say, like, I'll write whatever gift message you want to your mom, like, or, which was actually amazing and so sweet. I mean, to get to, like, handwrite everybody's sweet messages to each other was a pretty amazing turn of events, really, in a time where you think you just everything would just be so sad all the time. So,
Yeah, absolutely. It's always interesting talking to the people in the States and other countries, because where we live, well, where I live in Australia, we avoided almost COVID like for like 2 years, and we only had like, I don't know, one lockdown of like 2 weeks or something, because we shut our borders, and
Right. I
they were
remember,
very
yeah.
strong about keeping people in their areas. Like Victoria had a terrible time, like they had months-long lockdowns and stuff, but up here we almost life was almost normal, except that we couldn't go anywhere. As in,
Right.
we couldn't leave the state. We could live our lives mostly normally. So we lived in this weird little bubble, watching what was happening in the rest of the world. Of course, it's everywhere now,
Yeah.
but everybody's just it's used to it. It's just part of
Yeah,
life.
it was really interesting seeing how all the different places dealt with it. Everybody felt so dug in on their positions that this was the right thing to do. In the end, we're all in the same place now.
Yeah, exactly. We got there in the end. So I'm curious about your how you developed your style. Being someone who has a similar minimalist style, we were joking before we were recording. I was like, I can't look at too much of your jewelry because I don't want to like accidentally steal something from you. As much as I like it, unsurprisingly. But yeah, how did, 'cause you were saying you started off with two very different mentors, someone who made a beaded sort of jewelry and someone who made more traditional jeweler shop jewelry, the stuff you see, you go down the mall or whatever. So how did you sort of make that evolution, and did it take a long time, or was it something that happened relatively early in your career?
Yeah, I don't, I, it did happen fairly early. I don't really remember working on it really. Like it's just sort of, I started working with different materials. When I was originally starting out, gold was fairly inexpensive, or at least comparatively. So I only worked in silver and 14 karat. I did, I played around with things. I started out using a little bit more stringing of things, probably because of the woman I was working with. But I didn't do any beading, but I would use some of that silk cord. Everything that she would use was beaded on like purling silk, but of all these different bright colors. So I originally started making kind of geometric shapes on these like bright color cords. And then just eventually moved away from that. I think, I'm not sure why, but I just got tired of it, I guess. But yeah, I don't know. I think it's just sort of slowly evolved. I mean, it was sort of chunkier to start with, and it's gotten smaller and smaller and smaller in terms of like, the gauges of wire and the daintiness of the chain and everything has gotten pretty small. I'm starting to try and make a, like, I think I'm starting to swing the other way and move things a little bit bigger. But I've always been drawn to shapes that are like, I like a little bit of asymmetry. And I like shapes that are not so, so super regular, so I try not to use full circles or exactly like perfect shapes. I like things to have a little bit of wonkiness to them, which both allows for every piece to be a little bit different. And even though I do like create a prototype and reproduce the necklace based on that, each one will still be a little tiny bit different because the shapes are all kind of organic, so it makes it feel a little more personal. And I try and find a balance between like minimalism and then natural elements. So I like to use, I do little mountainscapes, like things that are very Vermont-y, because where I live is kind of a, it's a very popular tourist area, and it's kind of a romantic part of New England with, green mountains and just skiing, and it's kind of a popular place to come vacation. And it's mountainous in a very quiet kind of New England mountains way. So I make a lot of mountain things. I have mountain rings and things that are easy to, that people like, and they're easy to sell, and they're popular here. But also leaves and little petals and flower elements and things, kind of mix a combination of simplicity and nature, so it's not too severe. And I really try, my main focus is to make things that people can wear easily and sleep in or shower in or never have to take off, or you can wear it with a t-shirt, or you can wear it if you're getting dressed up. Like the same piece kind of transitions easily with what people are doing, because I think most of my customers are people like me who are busy parents and are doing lots of things and are going from like working to, basketball games, like whatever their kids are doing, you know, and you want to be able to, I want it to be easy and something that's not going to be getting in the way or take a lot of thought.
Yeah, our styles have a lot in common, definitely. Those are all things that I like as well, you know, the nature elements and the easy to wear elements. It's one thing I love about the simple jewelry, you know, the minimalist type style of jewelry. I wear a lot of rings as well, so that's my, it's funny, I'm a jeweler who almost never wears necklaces. That's just something I've never personally liked to wear. I wear a lot of earrings and a lot of rings, but so I kind of have to make myself make necklaces sometimes. I'm like, other people like these. You should make more.
That's how I was with bracelets for a long time. I never made bracelets for the longest time because I never wore them. And I was like, I don't know, what do people look for in a bracelet? This is not part of my life. But I've had to, you know, I figured it out, branched out into all the, not all the things. I don't make like toe rings or anklets. Or
right.
Like, sometimes you can for that kind of thing, but.
Yeah, absolutely. So you've sold on your own website for a very long time. Did you ever sell on venues like Etsy or Amazon or any of those sorts of places as well?
At the beginning, when I was still in New York, Etsy had started and I started out, I think I had my own website also, but it was very old and the old websites were impossible to update yourself. So you had to send anything to your designer to like add any one thing. So it was, and I don't even remember if it had e-commerce on it or not. So I did sell on Etsy for a little bit. I had some kind of negative interactions with other sellers and customers about, you know, why does this cost so much? Or you're trying to copy my jewelry. Why does your necklace look like my necklace? I'm like, I don't know who you are. Like, I'm not copying you. But people were, I found it to be not a very relaxing place to be trying to be creative. And I did feel like there was a lot of like downward price pressure because so many people were not doing it for a living. They were doing it as a side hustle or as just a hobby and not caring about pricing properly. And since I started out with wholesale, I already knew how to set my wholesale prices, which given were probably still too low, but I knew that I had to match my retailers. So everything I was selling on Etsy was full retail price, even in 2003 or whenever it was. And it just didn't feel like a good fit. And I just kind of ditched it. I had another little side business that I did, a paper collage business for a while that I sold on Etsy, and I worked at it a bit more. But by that point, I had been working on my jewelry business and my own brand for a little bit longer. And I really like the way that having your own website allows you to really define your look and your brand, and you can have your, you know, the photography can be so much more, you know, bigger, make a bigger impression when people click on your page. And you can tell your story in a way that is the way you want to do it. And I think people don't also, you know, there's no one on my website suggesting like, here's more things like this.
Yes. Yes.
So once I moved up here and I decided to really try and focus on having a website, I built a Shopify site, which I could, you know, update myself and take, you know, the way, you know, adding a listing is so much more similar to the way you do it on Etsy than the way Etsy was really first at being able to make it easy for makers to make a listing and upload your photos and create your own listing. But once Shopify pulled all that in and it made it so much easier to do that too, it just seemed like if I was going to be spending a lot of effort trying to drive traffic to my website, I wanted it to be my website.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think a lot of those points you make are still appropriate and accurate. Like there's still the downward price pressure, you know, then the competition. I mean, there's competition everywhere and I make that point to people, but you don't have that issue of, having Etsy putting like other people's listings at the bottom of your listing and all of those sorts of things. When people buy from you on Etsy, they go, oh, I bought it on Etsy. They don't go, I bought it from Rebecca Haas, So there are all of those elements that are negatives of the platform that people need to be aware of compared to having your own website. I mean, there are challenges with having your own website. Obviously, you have to pay for hosting, you have to have your own security and backups and all that sort of stuff people don't think about all the time. I mean, with Shopify, they take care of all that for you, I believe. You have to drive your own traffic. Now, this is the biggest issue, of course, a lot of people will come up against. I sell on Etsy, and the majority of my sales on Etsy have always come from Etsy themselves. So I've always come from Etsy search, and that's what I always optimized for, was getting sales from being on the platform, because that was the whole point of being on the platform, is to take advantage of the marketing they're doing to drive traffic to their website. And then any traffic I drive to my own .com. Like, I have my own website, and that's the marketing effort I put in goes there. So how do you now, what's like the most successful marketing strategies you employ to get people on your website?
So I think for sure the number one is Instagram. I started at the same time as working on my photography and working on my website. I started really trying to build up my Instagram. So now I have just over 10,000 followers, and it's enough sort of self-sustaining. Like, I feel like I have reached enough critical mass on Instagram that enough people see something when I launch it that, that the people will see it and click over. I think that's one way that I acquire new business and new customers. I think that's one of the ways that all my new wholesale customers have found me is Instagram for sure, because I don't do any wholesale shows anymore. So most wholesalers like will look for Vermont Jeweler, or somehow they'll find me and contact me directly, which is great. It's definitely, well, it's free, so it's a lot better than going to do a wholesale show somewhere.
Yes.
But the other, I've basically focused all my marketing on how to, on driving traffic. So I try and even the shows that I do is that's a part of the reason that I go out into the world and do craft shows, direct to consumer craft shows, so that I can meet people face to face. They can buy something or not, but they can take a card. But a lot of times the shows I do are in the summertime. And a lot of customers that come back at Christmas are people that have bought something in the summer for themselves, and then they remembered and they want to buy something for Christmas. So the more people that I meet face to face out in the world continues to drive traffic to my website later. I try to give really good customer service so that people will come back. So, getting orders out quickly, making the packaging nice, like doing good communication around orders. It helps me get, I have a lot of repeat business, which helps to not, it's so much easier to have someone shop a second time than find a new person. So, and then I have an email list that I send out emails periodically. I should do more, but recently I've been more struggling with keeping up with demand than driving more traffic. So I've been, that's been my struggle, is trying to how to like do everything by myself. So I've let a lot of the marketing stuff slide a little bit, which is fine, except for that I miss it. I really like doing that stuff, and I think it's a fun part of the business, and it's a fun part of communicating with people, and it's really the only way to keep growing. But right now I've had to kind of be like, all right, I should not spend time writing an email. I should spend time getting these orders out in a timely way, or returning the emails that people have asked me questions about. I've gotten to a point right now that scaling is my challenge, and I'm working through it. I'm not really sure where it's gonna go, but I did just recently hire a studio manager, which I'm excited about. The problem up here is it's very rural where I live. So there, it's very hard to find people to hire. Like, there's nobody around that just knows how to make jewelry. There's like not people that want to, there's no colleges nearby. There's no, it's not a, it's a very old population. It's mostly vacation homes and retired people. And so I've been able to find, I have a bookkeeper. I have some people that will come in and pack packages and, you know, ship pack, do packing and shipping, but production is really hard. And once I train someone, then the turnover is quick. So I'm taking a new tack, and I've found somebody that I think is going to help me just get more organized and handle some customer service things and follow the chain. If someone sends something back for a repair, she can kind of follow that chain of conversation and make sure that it's going through in a timely manner. Because now, you know, someone will send me something for repair and then it sits there for 6 weeks and then they get mad. And then I have a whole email conversation about why they're mad. And like,
Oh
that is a total, like, it's a completely shooting myself in the foot, but can't wait from it because other things have deadlines. And so that's my, I'm trying to solve those problems. And it's a little, it's been frustrating and it's been making me feel a little like burnout-y a little bit because I feel like there's nothing's ever finished. Like there's not, you know, there's no like, oh good, I finished that. It's done. I can take some time off. Like there's always somebody that's not satisfied or something that's not happening at the rate that somebody wants. So
It's tiring, yeah. Do you take
it's
vacations?
tiring. I take vacations. I'm very protective of my time off. I try not to work on the weekends. I try and take an hour every morning that my kids leave for school at 7:30. So I try and take an hour and like read a book or drink coffee or just be chill. I'm like, I don't have to go to work at 7:30. Most people aren't working at 7:30. I can like go to work at 8:30. But the problem with being a going on vacation when it's a one-person business is that all the work that you got when you were on vacation is still waiting there for you when you get back. So it's not like, you know, then you just have double the work the week after.
Do
So I mean,
you
vacations are
actually like
great.
stop taking orders, or do you just keep taking orders and then you just have to catch up?
I still keep taking orders because I don't really know how to shut off my website. I mean, I guess I could just make everything look sold out and really try and publicize that I'm away. But it's not even the orders so much because I try not to take a vacation. I'm not going to take a vacation during like the Christmas rush or anything. So it's not going to be 50 orders. It's going to be like three or four or five orders over the week. But, you know, then there's just all the email correspondence and all the like other things that people are waiting to hear, you know.
Customer service stuff that takes up a lot of time, definitely.
Does.
So just to backtrack slightly, because I had a few questions about email. The first one was, how do you find, like, how do you get people on your mailing list? Because I have a lot of students and stuff who go, oh, it's so hard to get people on mailing lists. I'm like, yes, but there are strategies. So I'm curious about what strategies you use to get people on your mailing list for, in the first place.
So I have a pop-up window on my website, which when my web the person who was helping me build my website was like, you should have one of these. It's like they're so annoying. Everybody hates those things. Like, yes, but they work. So I have a pop-up window and I've set the settings so that it only pops up to new people, or you know, if you haven't been on my website for 30 days, it'll show it to you again. So it's not super obnoxious, but it's really effective. And I have an offer for people when they sign up for my mailing list, they get a coupon code for one order at 15% off. So, as a new mailing list member, they get to get one discounted order. It has an automatic, it arrives in an automatic like welcome sequence of emails. So those emails have a really high open rate and click rate, which is great. And it's a nice way to, you know, people open it because they want the coupon code, but then they also read your story and get a little bit more of the information you want them to have. So yeah, so that's the biggest way. And then there's also, it's on my website and other places that you can sign up. I have it with me at shows, so I offer it to people when they make, you know, when they buy something at a show. I'll ask if they're on the mailing list or if they want to be. Better about it than I used to be. I used to just not ask because I hated to put people on the spot, but I'm better about it now. But those are the two main things.
Cool. Yeah, we were in my membership, we were talking recently about craft shows and mailing lists, and we talked about the idea of having a QR code that people that would send people straight to your mailing list sign up page. You know, so that's something in the modern age people might want to try, is having like a little board that has, you know, get 15% off your first online order, sign up to the mailing list, and then just a QR code so people can just click on it and go straight to there and sign up, and you don't have to like take care of having manual lists that you have to write people's
That's
stuff
a good
down on.
idea.
Yeah. So
I didn't know you could do that for the mailing list. I have that for Instagram, but I didn't know you could do that for the mailing list sign up.
Yeah, you just have to find a QR code creator online, and then you can put any URL in there, and boom, you can make a QR code to send people anywhere. So pro tip, people, if you're doing markets these days, it might be a nice thing to do, because people can sign up without even having to talk to you. They can just see it there and go, oh yeah, okay, and then go do that. So, and you know, sure, they might get 50, they might, you know, get the discount rather than buying from you on the day, but then they're on your mailing list and hopefully they'll keep buying from you over and over. So you got to think of the long game.
Yeah, exactly. And I do feel like it's paid off. I mean, I can look on my website, the number of people that have used that code, you know, now that I've had it going for, I don't know, 7 years, maybe now, you know, it's generated a lot of sales. So even though they're slightly less, like the profit margin is slightly less, it's generated a lot of sales. And I do think that most people do stick around. I mean, I don't feel like I have a lot of people that just buy once and vanish.
Yeah, which is nice. And just talking about profit margin, you know, you were talking earlier about how when you started out, you didn't know how to price properly. Most people don't know how to price properly when they start out. And, you know, I see a lot of people talking about Etsy fees or fees for whatever. And they're like, oh, I don't make any money. The fees are so high. I'm like, if you're not making money, you're not pricing right, because the fees should be in your wholesale price, not even in your retail price, you know. So a 15% discount on a properly retail priced item is actually not that much, and you should still be making a big profit out of that if you are pricing correctly, right?
Yeah, no, it's totally fine. I mean, everything that I have is priced to be able to take wholesale into account, which is 50%. So taking, you know, 15% off is totally worth it for me to get somebody. I think, especially when people are buying online, sometimes they need a little bit of a push to be like, I don't know, you know, this is a one person business in Vermont, like, you know, sometimes just a little nudge helps someone. So to get people to take that leap, I think 15% is totally worth it.
Yeah, for sure. Now, you were talking earlier about, you know, how you started your day, kids are off at school. Reminds me, I grew up in rural areas, and yeah, having to leave for school at 7:30 in the morning sounds really familiar. And not getting home till like 4:30, 5 o'clock in the afternoon. Takes a while. The bus takes a while. So yeah, how do you, what is your sort of normal day, normal week? How do you balance, you know, you're saying it's always a challenge, you know, you pay attention to one thing, something else slides a little bit, but like, how do you sort of manage all of your life and your business together?
Yeah, it is definitely a challenge. I have recently, like when my kids were babies and were very demanding and toddlers, I was really protective of my work time. You know, my husband and I both work for ourselves, so we were always juggling, like, well, I have to work. No, I have to work. You know, it's like chaining the babies back and forth and kind of really protectively guarding our work time. But now that our kids are getting a little older, I feel a little bit more protective of my family time. And I want to, like, I know that the work time can kind of creep over everything. And I know long term that that's just not going to be healthy for me to try and work all the time. It makes me fun to be around. So, and not creative. It's like doing a creative business, you need to have the breaks in order to come back. And, you know, there's so much that's creating, not just creating the jewelry, but creating like an email, or creating like nice photographs, or creating, you know, any, it's like so much of it is even the structure of your, like, getting creative to make it all work together is,
yeah,
like, requires a lot of like creative thinking. So
yes,
I do try to take, you know, a lot of breaks. So my kids go to school, you know, like same, like you were saying, basically they're gone at 7:30 and they're home at 4. So that's kind of my work time. Like, I'll take the first hour to like read, relax, drink coffee, eat breakfast, take a shower. And then I work pretty steadily straight through until just about 4. And then sometimes, I'll go get the kids from the bus. Sometimes I'll go back to work if I'm working on a deadline, race down to the post office to ship orders before 5. And then that's it. And I try not to work on the weekends unless it's a craft show time or Christmas time, or there's a few seasons that get, sort of encroach a little bit on my structure, my separation. But I try to make sure, that I'm home and present and around when the kids are, as soon as they're back. But by the time it's dinner time and stuff, we're pretty well separated. I mean, I work from home, but and we live in this, like, it used to be a dairy barn. So one end is the offices and then the other end is the house. So
Oh,
it's very separated. So we call one end the business end and it's like the home end. So I try and really step away and be done after 5.
wow. It sounds like you've been doing this a long time, obviously. So it sounds like you've got a good kind of routine developed there and a good sort of set of habits around balancing that time.
Yeah, I think so. I've gotten better about it, and I've tried to, really carve out separation between my life and my work life.
And I really love what you said about, I just want to put a pin in it about the creativity of running a business. And I think people don't really think about how much creative energy it takes, not just the making, but everything else. You're
Yeah.
creating content marketing, you're creating, like you said, you're creating new stuff, you're creating stuff you already have, you're talking to people, you're, like you said, balancing things. And there's a lot of problem solving. There's a lot of mental energy and creative energy that goes into running a business like this. And the other thing is that, you never reach a point in business where you're like done. As you said, you can't go, hey, I figured it all out. It's all done.
Yeah. We did
Yeah, I'm finished. Yeah, no, that doesn't happen. I think beginner business owners, she's laughing the laugh of the experience. I think beginner business owners think they're going to reach this point where they figured it all out and they're kind of finished and they can just kind of cruise. And yes, it does get easier after the first few years when you have that really steep learning curve and then it sort of peters out a bit, but it never goes away. It's not like it ever, you can't just rest on your laurels and think it's all going to work because the world around you is always changing. Technology is always changing. People's tastes are changing. For those of us who've been in business a long time, yeah, we've been through global recessions, pandemics, changing, just changing, what's what I'm looking for here? Like zeitgeist about what people care about. Like I remember when sort of
Right.
I was first starting in 2008, it was a really big booming time for people start like picking up craft again. Like that was a thing that people started to do. And I think Etsy kind of rode on the coattails of that and was part of it as well. I don't know, but
Yeah.
there was like blogs everywhere. Like I was a blogger as well, and I had a
Oh
successful
yeah, I
lifestyle
remember the
blog.
blog days.
Yeah, right. And
Yeah.
that worked so well for me, and that's how my business got off the ground. And nowadays it just wouldn't work anymore because people don't hang out in the comments of blogs anymore. They hang out on TikTok or Instagram or whatever, wherever they hang out. And if you and I personally, I don't use TikTok. I don't like it. So
I don't either.
I'm digging my millennial heels in on TikTok. Even though I know I should embrace it, but I'm just like, I just don't want to. So I'm sticking with Instagram. So there's that balance. You have to find that balance too of like, okay, well, I have to get with the times and go where my customers are hanging out. Thankfully, my customers are older, so most of them aren't on TikTok anyway. But if you are having a younger demographic or whatever, you have to adapt and you have to kind of roll with that and keep up with it all. So it's never done, and it's never easy and it's never simple.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, even if you get to a point in your business, like I feel like now, like I said, I haven't been doing as much work on marketing because I do feel like it's gotten to a point where it is a little bit self-propelling, but the bigger business has different problems. So it's like different things to figure out. Like I was talking about scaling or trying to figure out how to balance it all. Like it's maybe you've solved one problem and it creates another problem. Like not that being busy is a problem, but it's a good problem, but
It's a
it's definitely
challenge.
something that needs to be, fixed, kind of like it needs to be organized in a way that doesn't drive you crazy. So, or leave customers unhappy, to try and do a good job at the scale that you're at. It's a totally different skill set than starting out as like a scrappy person selling things on a table on the street. It's like a very different like level of knowledge you need to have. And even if you say like, all right, I'm gonna stick with Instagram. Instagram isn't static either. Like Instagram keeps changing,
Oh my
and then you have
God.
to figure out what the heck they want you to do. And Etsy is the same way. That's one of the
Yeah.
reasons Etsy is another skill all unto itself that you have to learn. And I was like, I don't want to learn all that just to get on, to make someone else's platform work for me.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's you just have to keep learning and keep rolling with it, which is great. I mean, it doesn't get boring. It's like, I like that process, but you do need to get enough sleep and rest and take time off in order to be able to keep doing it.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, it can get burnouty as well, as you said. I had a bit of that last year when I was just like, I just been doing the same thing for a long time and it just gets a bit much sometimes. I think you lose that creativity and you lose the novelty aspect sometimes, and that makes it hard to kind of be passionate about it and get into it. And I'm a big believer in, if you're a creative professional, you sit down and do the work, and that's just how it goes. You can't wait for the muse to come along.
Right.
It's not something that you can rely on. But at the same time, you do need enough creative energy to keep going and keep propelling yourself forward. So for me, taking a big break was really effective for that. I took a month off completely from everything, which I'd never done in 14 years or whatever, and it was really, really good. Hard, but good.
Did
I
you
did hire
just
someone,
turn
obviously,
off
to.
your like, how did you turn off your website? I mean, I know
Well,
Etsy, you can be on vacation.
yeah, I'm on WooCommerce and you can put it on vacation as well. There's a setting that you just switch on vacation mode. And for my other business, Create and Thrive, I had autoresponders set up and I hired somebody to watch my email and like deal with any problems. And then she's actually a friend of mine, so she had my actual phone number. So if there was something she could not handle, she would text me or message me and go, "There's this thing." It only happened a couple of times, amazingly enough, but I didn't have to be on. I could just, somebody else was taking care of watching everything. And even having that mental break was so good. There was one or two like emergencies during the time, but even having to deal with them was nothing compared to the constant pressure of it always being in the back of your mind that I've got this email, I've got these customers, I've got da da da. So yeah, that worked well for me. Would recommend, but it's not easy
That's
to
sort of
do.
what I'm hoping for with my new studio manager. And that's kind of what I explained to her. She's also a friend and she doesn't need a full-time job, but she's wanting something creative and fun to do. And I was like, I need somebody to be the official worrier about all the little details, because I feel like right now my head is so stuffed with like, oh, don't forget that person who's doing this. And don't forget this person asked you about this. And don't forget about this order or this consignment gallery wants this. And like, it's just like so much mental clutter that I'll lie in bed and be like, oh, that thing's falling through the cracks. Like, oh, I forgot that one thing. And it's relentless. And so I would like to offload a lot of that and have somebody trustworthy that I'll be like, all right, these things are all under your umbrella. You let me know if there's a fire and I will put it out if you can't do it. But like on a weekly basis, just the little things. And because I realized like if you're in the weeds trying to constantly keep caught up on little details all week, you never have a chance to sit down and think like, is this working? What do I want to do next? Where do I want to be in 5 years? Like, you don't get to do the dreaming and the envisioning and the planning because you just don't have the mental space. And even just like talking to her and having this new plan about her coming on, I've been like, oh, and what will I now do with all of my free mental energy and some time? You know, like, what are some areas, like maybe I could create a different line for like a slightly, you know, different client, or maybe I could figure out how Pinterest works. Drive some more business now. Like maybe I could focus on growing and again, and how do I want to do that? Which is just the flexibility and this mental space to do that is like so psyched to have that again.
Yeah, it's that concept of the mental load that you hear a lot, you know, when people talk about managing a household or whatever. It's just like you've still got that, but then you've got a whole nother one on top of that, you know, because you're not only the manager of your business, you're all of the things, and you know that is what can get really challenging. A couple of the ways I deal with the planning aspect that I talk about is one, I do a monthly planning day where I actually take myself away from my home. And I go to a library or a cafe, or usually both in succession. And all I do for a couple of hours is I plan like the next month and all of the things that need to be done and blah, blah, blah. And I find getting myself out of my normal environment is really important because if I'm in my office or I'm at home, I just get caught up with all the little things that need to be done in that environment. And the other thing I do is I do a yearly planning retreat where I actually go away for a couple of days and I plan out the year, the following year. So I do that usually in kind of late November, which is, I know, it's not the best time for someone with a jewelry business, but because our business focuses a lot on wedding rings, we don't have like the huge rush at Christmas time that a lot of jewelers have. Like our business is more steady throughout the year. We do have a small bump, but it's not like epically huge. And usually by the end of November, actually, we're pretty much done because, you know, shipping overseas, you have to cut off like in November, and then shipping domestically, we cut off in early December. So yeah. But yeah, those things have been really, really helpful for me to keep the momentum going because otherwise there's no break. Like there's no break, there's no structure, there's no, unless you create it yourself, it just keeps rolling on and it's the same. It's like Groundhog Day, day in and day out.
I do sometimes when things get really busy and I'm trying to keep several tracks running, like, you know, I'm trying to make sure I'm staying on top of like a wholesale order that's going to take me a certain number of hours, and also keep on track of web orders. And I know I need to promote a sale or something, you know, I'll do time blocking for the week, which really does help if I stick to it and I take the time to do it. And then I'll time block in my admin time, and anything else that comes in during the day, I don't stop and like write that person back right away. I'd be like, oh, I have admin time from 4:30 to 5, so that can all wait. And if I can be disciplined about it, it really does help like shuffle the mental load into columns so they're more doable. But and I fall in and out of the habit, which is too bad.
Yeah, I tend to use when I'm really busy and I need to focus, I tend to use the Pomodoro technique, which is like a time. So you set a timer for a work period and a timer for a rest period, and then you just keep doing that over and over. And I usually do like a 45-minute work period and a 15-minute rest period. The traditional one is 20 minutes work, 5 minutes rest, but I don't find that's enough rest to actually reset my brain to focus again. Like I like doing a slightly longer work period. And then 15 minutes is a good solid amount of time I can like go, I don't know, read a chapter of a book or go out and putt around the garden for a minute or get a cup of tea or something. And it just is enough to help me focus again. So yeah, that's one. That's one that
That's a good
works
way
for
too,
me.
because I find your brain needs the break, right? So that's why you end up scrolling on Instagram even when you're supposed to be working, because your brain needs to shut off for a minute. But yeah, if you schedule it that way with time, like I love timers. Timers. So nice to be like, oh, the timer tells me I have to do this now.
Yeah, that's it.
It
I'm just
really simplifies things.
letting it think for me. It's great. So, speaking of the future, like, are you happy with how things are? You just kind of want to keep things going the way they are. Do you want to grow more? Like, did you want to like get other jewelers in and actually expand, or are you ha sort of happy to keep it as it is and just sort of manage it better, I guess?
Yeah, I think I don't think I want to get other jewelers in. I thought about it for a while and I tried it. But it's really the part that I like to do the most. I mean, there are some things, that are repetitive. I make all my own clasps. So, if I could have somebody make all my clasps, that would be great, which I probably could find somebody in New York, in the jewelry district to do that. But I even like the kind of Zen aspect of that. But I would like to, hopefully the studio manager works out and maybe she could start to take over more things as we work together. I do worry about, I can't really work in the studio full time because I'll get I get tendonitis already in my elbow and my shoulder from and pliers and so I do a little bit worry about that. So I don't want to work myself to death. I would like to try and create some balance. But I don't really want to scale and have a huge business and that I'm ending up managing people rather than making things. So I tried raising my prices pretty steadily over a bunch of years to be like, maybe that'll sort of even things out. But it didn't seem to matter at all. It didn't slow down orders at all. So then I just started feeling like I was gouging people. So I stopped doing that. So I don't know. Figuring out more things that I can delegate in an easier way. Also, as my kids get older, and are not here as much, I have a feeling. And so in 5 years, my older son will be in college. My younger son will be in high school. They won't be needing to be driven everywhere and they won't be needing as much. So, my work day won't be as compressed. I will have more time to kind of less to juggle on the home side of things, so I'll probably be able to concentrate more and things will be a little bit like what I, easier, what I want them to be in my, imaginary land now. Not that I would give up what I'm doing with them, but it's, I think a lot of some of the mental load will be removed from that side of my life. So yeah, I mean, we're pretty settled here. This is actually where I grew up. The house that we live in, my house I grew up in is right across the lawn. So my mom is still there. And we live in the barn that was the house, like the barn for the original house. And I've renovated that. So my kids are growing up like right where I grew up, which is pretty cool. And we love it here. So I think we're staying put where we are and just see how it evolves business-wise. I've taken on recently, I became a member of a local gallery in a very busy touristy area here. So I'm a member and I have my own sort of area of this nice craft gallery. So that's been a little bit of a change. I have some play, I work there twice a month. So I have a little, I get out of the studio and talk to customers and have a kind of a mini version of my own store, with a very small amount of the responsibility and a small amount of the retail work hours that that requires, which is kind of a great balance. So I don't know, we'll see where things, there may be other things like that that come up or just kind of keep rolling with it, I guess.
Time will tell.
Time will tell, exactly. I was just going to say, if I can, my eternal challenge is to figure out how to grow my business without working more hours. So, kind of finding the the holy grail of, small business. So, I'm trying to be more efficient, I guess would be the thing. If I can figure out how to streamline things and make it a little bit more, smooth without a lot of stress and things falling off the rails. I'm sure there are ways. I'll find them. I don't know them yet, but I'll find them.
All part of the challenge, all part of the
Yes.
journey. I was just going to say it's funny. I actually lived in my parents' barn for about 6 or 7 years. So,
Oh, yeah. Nice.
before we bought this house. So it's funny. Did you by any chance bring along a quote today?
So I did. It's actually on my wall. I don't
Oh,
know. Should I
nice.
turn you?
Yeah, sure. Let's have a look. Oh.
You see it? Maybe.
Work harder,
Work
you
hard and be nice to people.
know.
So there's that one. And the other one is the other one that I think about, which is very similar. And it's kind of similar to something that you said earlier, actually. It's just do the work, right? So sometimes you get lost in the, what should I do with my time? Am I doing it all right? Like, what are the directions I should be going in? And sometimes when I start to spin out like that, I just go back to like, all right, here's the list of orders people have made. Like, here's the list of jewelry you have to make. Just sit down and make it and stop thinking so much. And that is a nice thing to fall into when you're feeling overwhelmed. Just like get back to basics.
Yeah, I love that. And that's so true. I've had that same feeling. It's like so many things going around. It's like, well, I could just go do this thing I know I have to do.
Exactly. Just don't start checking stuff off.
Just, and it's funny for me because I do run multiple businesses and it's like I make YouTube videos. Like there's a lot of creative stuff in both businesses. I actually weirdly find going down to the studio and making orders a real like restful period for my brain because I'm a production jeweler. I make to order. If someone's ordered something, I make it. So I've made that same thing probably how many times before or whatever. And it's a bit of a meditative process of just sitting down and it's kind of a restful break from all of the
really
thinking
is.
Work, you know.
Yeah. I listen to so many books. I listen to podcasts I can, you know, it's a really nice sort of half brain shut off, just being in like the flow state of doing the thing. It's great. It's like that's one of the biggest luxuries I think about being a maker is being able to just fall into the process of doing it and shut your brain off a little bit.
Yeah. And I think it's important to not lose that as well. Cause I say, you know, jewelry has always been your profession, but I say to a lot of my students, you know, if it was your hobby and now it's becoming your business, it changes your relationship with the craft. You know, you're not just making purely for your own enjoyment or purely for fun anymore. You know, there's another layer on top of that. And for some people that's enhances it. And for some people it destroys it. So, you know, you can never quite know which one you're going to be until you get there. So yeah, you just have to try it and see what happens, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and I think, you know, keeping the play involved is important too. You know, that's like finding that creative time. You know, sometimes I realize that if I'm feeling behind on orders or feeling behind on whatever, like, and I decide to sit down and spend an hour making something new, like I have this guilty pleasure, like, oh, I'm just like doing this for fun. Just totally blowing off my responsibilities and making jewelry that I want to make, you know, which is of course part of the process. It's an important part of the process.
Yes.
But it does sort of start to feel like, you know, like something you just get to do for fun when it's not on your list of tasks.
It's a nice feeling to hold on to, definitely. So speaking of your website, as we have been, where can people go to find your beautiful work?
So my website is RebeccaHaas.com. And then my Instagram handle is the same, Rebecca Haas. And those are really the two places.
Yeah. And if you want to get on the mailing list, maybe do that.
Yes, definitely do that on my website. Please do.
Rebecca, it's been an absolute pleasure chatting with you today. Thank you so much for coming on the show and sharing your story with us all.
Yeah, you too. This has been really fun. I'm so glad.
Awesome. Bye.
Bye.
And that's it. I hope you enjoyed this one. If you're on YouTube and you did, make sure to give this a thumbs up and leave me your biggest takeaway in the comments below. If you're listening on a podcast platform, please consider leaving a rating and review. I would really, really appreciate it. And if you want to share your thoughts, hit me up on Instagram at Create and Thrive. I'd love to hear from you. I'm also always looking for new makers to interview. So if you have a successful and profitable handmade business, get in touch. Let me know. I'd love to chat with you. Thanks so much for being here, and I will catch you next time. Bye for now.